Welcome to the Big Mike Fund Podcast, where you learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secured retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in, because Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. It is my privilege and honor to have Sol Z from Chicago, my brother from the Collective Genius Mastermind, to join us. Hi, Sol.
Hey, what's up?
How's the weather in Chicago nowadays?
Today it's quite all right. We had a pretty, cold last couple of weeks, but today I think it's, probably like 5 above 0, so it's better.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about you, what you do, your real estate business. From what I understand, you have a very diversified business. You have kind of 4 divisions.
Yeah. So pretty much the way I started in real estate as an appraiser. And then I transitioned selling homes, then buying homes and fixing them, and also financing and doing mortgages. So in right now, what we evolved in the last 10 years, we have 4 divisions. We have deals with buying homes, wholesaling and fixing and flipping them as well. Also, we have a division for brokerage. We have 10 agents, and last year we did $55 million in volume on traditional brokerage, and we have a mortgage division for end buyers, for FHA conventional buyers. We processed over $25 million of volume in that division, and also we have title. So it's kind of 4 divisions, mortgage, brokerage, deals, and title investor.
That's great. That's like a full service everything. You're providing brokerage. You can help somebody sell a house. You can help somebody buy a house.
Yeah.
You can help somebody get a mortgage, mm-hmm. and you can help them get title insurance for the transaction. And you're doing some very impressive volume.
Well, we don't do much, that much as our Collective Genius brothers on deal side, but in terms of other aspects, I think it's pretty sizable for the amount of people we have. Entire organization is probably less than 30 people in all divisions, but with the 10 agents and 2 loan officers, that's quite a lot per agent production or per loan officer production.
It's still very impressive. I'm impressed.
All right. Thank you.
It's very interesting world. CG, the Collective Genius Mastermind, has evolved, and many folks are much more diversified nowadays. They used to be specialists. Yeah. They just did a lot of short sales and whatnot, and nowadays it's just everything. You have to be a rehabber. You have to be a wholesaler. You have to be a broker, and mm-hmm. You often have to be in the mortgage business too. So having all those 4 divisions, how do you keep proper separation of responsibilities of duties? Because you have different hats.
Yeah. So obviously, I'm not the only one. So I have 3 partners. I have a partner who is overseeing title. I have a partner in the brokerage side. I have a partner in a mortgage, and mortgage partner is my wife. She is. Day-to-day operations manager, and she's the one who's overseeing that aspect. I'm still the big, so to speak, CEO of all the company, so I have accountability meetings and one-on-one meetings with all the leaders of those divisions. Just kind of give you a big picture. So on the books with the state and with accounting, in our books, it looks like it's a 4 separate companies. It's not really one company. It's 4 separate companies. At the same time, we're sharing marketing and accounting kind of, the same. So all the companies are chipped in expense for marketing and expense for and managing and controlling and financing. The rest of the pieces like sales and whatever comes in those companies are separate. So the way it's structured, just pretty much there is a leader in every single company or division, and I oversee that, and I oversee marketing and financials on all the companies. So meaning I'm looking at the reconciliations of the books every single month. I'm cutting expenses and I'm adding expenses. I'm also the one who is doing a new initiative for the marketing, and I'm telling which initiative has to be kiboshed.
Understood. So from everything I heard, you are the big boss.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Well, I'm a little bigger boss. Yeah.
That's great. Let's talk a little bit about Chicago in general, real estate in Chicago. So in your brokerage business, you're moving over $50 million per year in transactions. Yeah. Are they mostly residential houses, single family, some duplexes, quads, triplexes, any of that stuff?
Yeah, mostly that's, I would say, 70%, 70, 75% single families, another 20% condos, and maybe another 5%, maybe 10 max are duplexes, triplexes, you know, fourplexes. Occasionally, very occasionally, we're going to have a commercial deal. Okay. An apartment building, but that's our bread and butter single families, I would say.
This is a classic, I guess, scenario for a big city. You have a mix of condos and single family houses.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, you know, I think, you know, the closer you get to the city, there's more condos. But for us, the way it works.
Are you one of the suburbs?
Well, we cover entire Chicagoland. We cover mostly Cook County and DuPage. Cook is Chicago. But I think the reason is just because, you know, all marketing, you know, so we. Well, main marketing expense are for deals, right? We're spending a lot of money to acquire deals, but and not every single seller will fit for the deal. So then if it doesn't fit for the deal, it goes to the traditional brokerage. But since we're mostly targeting single families, that's why we have more single families on the traditional side. Same thing for mortgages. No, they mortgage, they have no marketing expense at all. Because, you know, all the deals that are coming from mortgage are actually
referral,
you know,
from the other business,
from traditional side, which, you know, so that's the reason why there's mostly single family homes.
That's a great model. It's a no lead left behind. I guess that's the kind of the term that I've heard. You market to find deals, and then when something doesn't fit, you find a home for every opportunity.
That's where it is. The most what we're doing on the broker side, on the mortgage side, and the title side especially, we technically don't have any new business acquisition costs on the brokerage side and title cost on the title side. Everything kind of you know falls down from the other businesses.
So Chicago market, what's been going on? Have you seen pretty good appreciation in the single family housing market? Is that similar to many other cities? What's been the trend? Obviously, now we're going into the winter season, and things are probably slowing down somewhat.
Well, you know, I thought it was going to slow down a little bit more, actually. But frankly, you know, the market is hotter than last year. I think that's kind of, I'm looking last January and this January. Last week we put three deals together. I think on the traditional side, we had in the first week 10 deals together, like on the brokerage side. So inventory is very low. In terms of appreciation, again, it varies from neighborhood to neighborhood. I would say overall we had, I would say, between 5 to 6% appreciation. But there are neighborhoods, you know, who appreciate like, you know, 10%, over 10%. There are neighborhoods who are still have over normal levels of inventory, so we're not marketing that. But overall, I mean, the main big picture is that it is a shortage of inventory, shortage of single family homes. I mean, the last deal yesterday, I sent it out and I normally would have, you know, 5-6 showings. We booked 30 showings. We had 12 offers, which would not expect last year on the deal.
In the winter time.
And it's just a big, big shortage of inventory. So I think it's going to be a great year again for finding deals. And I don't really see exactly why would that stop. Of course, no. I'm talking about ERVs which are between 2 to 500,000. Everything was a 5 to 1 million. It was never super hot. I mean, the product is moving, but it's not as hot as that 2 to 500,000. Everything what is above $1 million, it is kind of stale. And we don't buy that product a lot, but I'm hearing from builders that actually it's slower than it was 2016, you know, especially expensive condos, meaning those are, well, relatively expensive. And above $1 million condos in Chicago is considered an above median price, not as in New York. So those are moving slower.
Yeah, I appreciate that clarification. That's actually very consistent with other big cities. And I mean, New York, and on the lower end of the market, that market is appreciating probably above the average because there's a lot of demand and affordability is still there. And the moment you go higher up, big cities are not very affordable per se.
Yeah.
There's another interesting impact from the recent tax changes from the Trump tax plan. I don't know if it's called Trump or Republican or however you want to call it. What's included is they cut the mortgage interest deduction down to the first $750,000, which means that properties above $1 million with mortgages above $750,000 will have somewhat downwards pressure on them because of the limited availability of the not limited availability, but limited deductibility of the mortgage interest.
Yeah.
And the other thing is property tax deductions. I don't know what the property taxes are like in Chicago, but I think the $10,000 is the limit in this tax bill.
On not so positive side is that Illinois and Northern Illinois and Chicago are losing a lot of population. A lot of population is moving to Indiana or moving to other states like Atlanta.
Because of low taxes,
we have just, you know, give you an idea, like, you know, rule of thumb number on the taxes in Cook County is about 2% of the value. 2% of the value. In Will County, DuPage County, you know, sometimes they get like, you know, 2.5%, so which is way, way higher than our neighborhood states like Northern Indiana. So we're losing a lot of population over there. Also, in general, Cook County, which is the biggest county for Chicago, right? So it is considered one of the oldest in terms of demographically aged, and one of the older cities. So there is that demographics doesn't have, I mean, their buying power going down versus going up.
Yeah.
And their trend is downsizing versus upsizing. So that's another factor that works against Chicago, right? Those are from kind of not so positive sides. But at the same time, you know, I mean, you know, Chicago is pretty much on the same level of the cities as New York, LA, Tokyo. I mean, one of the main cities in the world, and cost of living here is considerably less expensive than New York. The quality of life you're getting, you know, pretty much, you know, everything what a major city can offer to you in terms of entertainment, food, sports, caliber of life you're getting, you know, for less expensive. So it's a really good place to be, you know, actually to do business here if you know what you're doing.
You should probably get some endorsement from the mayor of Chicago for promoting the city. It's a metropolitan city with higher costs than surrounding areas, but it's not as bad as New York, San Francisco, and those super metropolises.
Correct.
Makes sense. Yeah, Chicago is beautiful in the summer. I was in Chicago, I'm trying to remember when. I was at the Mastermind, I think it was May, and it was just so good. It's so pleasant, so nice. A little bit windy, a little bit, you know, I guess May and June probably very pleasant over there.
Yeah, May and June, and my favorite months are September and August. September and August, for me, are the best months to spend time in Chicago, in the city, and when lake is warm and there's you know, boats and a lot of activities, sports and concerts and all that stuff, it's just amazing.
Hearing these sort of demographic trends, I guess tax trends, migration in and out, what do you think are the next set of opportunities in Chicago market? If you were an investor and didn't have much information beyond kind of high level, would you be investing in condos? Would you be investing in single family houses? Would you be investing? I'm assuming a long term, not a flip.
Long term?
Okay. Yeah, for long term.
Yeah.
Where would you say, in your opinion, are the best opportunities for a mix of income and appreciation? I'll tell you, New York. There is no income here. There's a very limited amount of income you can get. You could get some level of income if you buy two or three family sort of a mixed use property, because you have a commercial plus a couple of apartments, and the cash flow is generally pretty low because the cap rates you're buying them at, say 3% or 4%, you get a mortgage, you have no positive leverage from that.
Mm-hmm.
So returns are pretty low. It's all appreciation play. I hope Chicago is not as bad. I don't know Chicago market well enough.
Yeah.
But what kind of returns? What kind of cap rates?
Well, all right. So if you're talking cap rates, you know, probably the, you know, I'll want to pick the asset class apartments, right? So if we look apartments, then there's North Shore, north side of the Chicago, where it's considered more expensive area for, you know, for decades like that. There's a south side that is a west side. South side and west side, what you see, guys, know that is a lot of crime activities, more crime in those areas. And historically, those are much lower price points than north side of the Chicago. So in the north side, let's say on apartment buildings right now, we're seeing maybe like, you know, four cap buildings. And so there is no, there's no cash flow play at this, and there is no inventory. And people who are buying there, it's just pretty much equity preservation, I would say, or equity preservation, and it's very easy management. The rental prices over there through the roof, the prices of those buildings are higher than before the crash. So let's say I'm talking 2007, 2000 recession. Those prices in Northside already are higher right now than it used to be before. But at the same time, the caps are at 4. If we look at South Shore or West Side, you know, we're looking at the caps, I would say, probably between 8 and 10. 8 and 10 caps.
Is big difference in 8 and 10 and 4.
Significant difference. But you have to have a huge management muscle to manage over. I mean, if you think you're going to go in the South Side and buy a building, you're going to cash out in New York at 4 and you're going to invest at 10 and you're going to hire property management. I mean, it's not going to happen. You have to have a partner who's going to manage that, or you have to have boots on the ground. It's just different management animal. At the same time, those prices are still not to the levels of 2007. So logically thinking, if nothing is going to bomb in the next 5 years, right, then the trend should be the same what happened on the North Side, that the value is going to go up to the 2007 and above. They also have a room were to appreciate in terms of rents, because rents are not as high in the South Side and in
North Side
in the South Shore, and there is a part of, you know, couple neighborhoods in the South Shore which are coming up. One of them is Hyde Park, where there's a Chicago University, and it's a big kind of, you know, community in that South Shore. It's kind of a catalyst for development, so to speak, you know. So North Side is completely developed. I mean, of course, there are new construction skyscrapers that are coming up, but in terms of, you know, how much opportunity there is in the South Side, there is more, just because that area was more neglected, more affected during downside. That's where, when Chicago was a candidate to having an Olympics, that's where everyone thought that's going to be major development is going to coming out. Well, you know, Chicago didn't win the Olympics, but there's still an opportunity there. And if we're going to continue with this trend of economic, you know, positive trend, there's more money is going to be pumped in that area than in the North Side, I think.
By the way, it's true everywhere else where you have somewhat disadvantaged neighborhoods. And if they go through gentrification, if they go through level of investments of sports facilities or other, yeah, that area grows quite well and quite fast. I don't know if you're familiar with New York. I like to use an example of downtown Brooklyn that used to be not the greatest area. And when Brooklyn Nets moved in, they built Barclays Complex. The whole area just lifted up hugely. It's just the whole neighborhood revived with that sports complex, and the condos are going up everywhere. I like to joke about that area. The area is great and everything else, but they still will sell you weed on the corner. What are you doing yourself besides? So are you making any long-term investments yourself? I know we've had this wonderful concept in Collective Genius. People have talked about investing for long term. So people, a lot of people are flipping. And I like to use this term, you know, flip five, keep one. That's the, I don't know if it's a rule of thumb, but it's been, you know, one of those well-known kind of doctrine. So have you been acquiring long-term assets? Remember, you sent us a deal. Trying to remember, did we fund the deal or no?
Well, actually, we're taking down cash.
You're taking down cash, right.
Happened this week, yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember why we didn't proceed, but at least you're taking it down cash. Maybe we could still chat a little bit more about this separately.
Yeah, we're still going to have this conversation. I'm in conversation with you about it.
Yeah, but that deal was a commercial deal, if I remember correctly. You were buying that for long-term. Can you mention a couple of things about that deal, if you don't mind?
Yeah, so pretty much, you know, in terms of long term, you know, I don't, you know, to be honest with you, I have like 4 single families. I have one duplex that you finance. We have to refi in the next month. It seems like you need capital, and I just never put my thought to put more of those deals. Just put a long term. But the deal I'm doing right now, it's an industrial building.
That's right.
Industrial building. Chicago is situated in the area where we have a lot of, you know, logistics. You know, it's kind of in the middle of the country, and the trend is that people, you know, need more products from Amazon. They're not shopping in a shopping center. So warehouse demand actually is increasing. So if you look at that asset class, it is a huge shortage of that, of the industrial buildings. It has to be specific industrial building, fitting small business kind of, type of owner use building, or maybe a couple owner use buildings. And those buildings you still can't get at 9, 10, 8% caps.
Yep.
And they're still in the same demand as apartment buildings. I mean, to go with a 10 caps right now in apartment buildings, you know, I have to go on the south side, have a shotgun and collect the rent. You know, I don't have to do that with that asset class. So we're doing the first building. It's going to be so a little bit about the building. It is over 76,000 square feet. The industrial building, and they had 4 tenants. Right now, only 2 tenants occupying. So it's only, I think, 20-25% occupied. We have potential tenants already there. It's going to cash flow right now, even after we buy cash from existing tenants. After we fill in the tenants after debt service, we're probably going to be cash flowing about $200,000 a year on that building. So, but anyway, so it's going to be around 10% cap building.
By the way, that's a very, very good point for the listeners, that people have been considering different areas of opportunities. And this is not a common sector, kind of industrial buildings. You have to be almost a specialist to know what you're doing, but the opportunities are there. Most definitely multifamily markets have been saturated. There's a lot of marketing happening in multifamily, and the yields have come down. I had another podcast recorded earlier today. I talked about yield compression. There's definitely yield compression in many other real estate asset classes, but industrial buildings and on all the commercial buildings might present a very interesting opportunity for folks to consider conversion projects. You take a building in one use, and then you convert for whatever old tenants, or it could be even vacant, and you can sort of redevelop it into a better opportunity. We're doing a couple of projects like this with the commercial kind of warehouse buildings getting converted to self-storage facilities. Yep. Seems to be one of the interesting trends nowadays.
Yep. So, yeah, I mean, it's pretty much a very similar concept. We're putting probably about $300,000 into it, just lifting up the building, and doing a new driveway, making a kick-ass lobby, just putting there some touch-ups on lighting and just making that building more inviting. So kind of doing a lift up like you would do on a single family. The main thing, of course, we have someone who has done it. So one of my partners, he has done it multiple times, 7 times. And
that's very important to have a partner with experience in whatever you're doing.
Exactly. Because he can give sense to that opportunity that it's okay to wait for a tenant for 6 months. It doesn't happen like you're going to have calls next day and stuff like that. So just we'll test that. It seems like it's not really a test. It will work. And I'll tell in 6 months now exactly when the building is built in.
So what's the best way for folks to reach you if listening to all the podcasts wants to sell a house in Chicago, wants to buy a house in Chicago, or needs brokerage services or mortgage services? Is there a great way to reach you?
Yeah, I mean, probably ideally would be, my cell phone, 630-742-4065, or go online at Chicagoland Home Buyer, which is www.chihomebuyer.com. chihomebuyer.com, or shoot me an email at saul@chihomebuyer.com.
Yeah, that sounds great. I appreciate you're one of the few people who shared your cell phone. So you may get phone calls in the middle of the night.
That's right. No problem. No problem, man.
Hope they are relevant calls, not some marketer trying to sell you some. One more question, actually. Do you have a book that you're reading now or a book you want to recommend? And I know number one choice is always the Bible, but beyond the Bible, is there a good book?
Number one book that I recently, I'm going to share the classic book that I'm reading right now. Actually, I'm reading it a second time. It's a Titan, The Life of John Rockefeller, and it's his biography by Ron Chernoff. Titan. It's called Titan, The Life of John D. Rockefeller.
That's great. Titan, The Life of John D. Rockefeller.
Yeah. Yeah,
I guess. Are you trying to become John D. Rockefeller of real estate in Chicago?
I wouldn't say that, but I can tell you that there's a lot of small distinctions you're getting from that book. I mean, the such intelligence and what he was able to accomplish. But there are small things and small decisions and moves that he did was so insignificant, you know, which actually had such a big impact in his life. So, there's like hundreds of those distinctions, you know, when you're reading, oh my God, you know, it's like, it makes sense what he did, you know, with that. So,
yeah, it sounds great. Thank you. Thank you for the recommendation. So I appreciate that. I think we're done. Thank you again.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to BigMikeFund.com or visit Amazon and type Mike Zlotnick. Keep listening and keep investing Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.